Welcome to Journey from Jacob. From our first breath to our last heartbeat, we are all on a journey. Jacob was a biblical character whose journey is documented for our benefit. Like all of us, there were unforgettable moments along the way, which required decisiveness. One of those decisions determined his destination. We will not only discuss Jacob's journey, but Israel's as well, right up to date. May this podcast inspire you to make choices along your way that will benefit others and guide you to the destination we all long for.
Hey, shalom friends, this is Paul. Today is October 7th, and I feel it's really important that we spend our time talking about October 7th 2 years ago and how much life has changed. We need to learn from this. We need to grow from this. We need to make necessary changes because of the unfolding of life in a way that was unexpected, I would say, to everybody. So 2 years ago, for me, I want to share what happened. So it's not unusual for my wife to wake up before me. That's kind of the norm. If she does, I soon wake up because she's grinding the coffee in the kitchen, which is next door, and I get up out of bed. But on this day, October 7, 2023, I woke because I heard the television, which was very unusual. So when I walked in the room, I realized immediately something was very wrong. I could see it in Marla's face. She began to tell me what she was hearing, and I was shocked. And I saw with my own eyes some of the screens at the shots that were being taken place on site. And as I stood, I felt helpless just watching the screen. But then I had this vision. It was of a giant weighted black blanket that was descending on a globe. And the globe was our planet. So I also saw these strange beings crawling out of a hole in the earth, one after another. It was very odd and weird. And I knew immediately that these were demons. So in the 45 years for me, being a believer, this is only the second vision I ever had. So over the past 2 years, this vision is just fleshed out. It's a reality. It wasn't God giving it to me for my encouragement, for me to know something about what's going to happen and the depth of how sincere my faith had to be and how perception was key for me to be able to discern what was going on. And not just for me, but for others too around me. So this was the beginning, October 7, 2 years ago, of the assault that emerged from Gaza, out of the tunnels, even though they flew over the barricades, the fences, the barbed fences. They cut through them. They ran through them with bulldozers. Any way they can get in, they did. These flying machines they made, but they were loaded. They were all loaded with high-powered ammunition and machine guns and hand grenades and knives and all kinds of weapons of destruction, and they began their assault. And it wasn't long before this began to unfold what was really going on in and out of Gaza. So the discovery of these tunnels, which were in Gaza, was just, I think from what I know, and I know a lot of people in Israel, and I try to find out accurate information, and they knew there were tunnels. I know they've had tunnels there for years, and they've been using them, but they hadn't been using them effectively until October 7th and the days which would follow up until now. So this was the beginning of an assault. The militant Muslim world knew that they had constructed an underground network, but no one else seemed to have known. Over 400 miles long entrances to and from the tunnels beneath schools and hospitals and mosques, as well as United Nations facilities. And it wasn't long before I began to understand the meaning of this deep black blanket, weighted black blanket. And it was quickly wrapping itself around the world, or slowly actually, wrapping itself around the world in a cloak of deception, but it spread quickly. In 2023, October 7th, the free world responded to this demonic attack in horror. They saw the same pictures I saw, you saw. And the response of Christians all around the world, especially America, it was just this universal sense of sympathy and collective expression of support for Israel's horrible state of national mourning. So I'm the director of the Ministry of Comfort My People, and We support Israeli believers who are sharing the love of Jesus, Yeshua, with the Jewish and Arab people. And I didn't ask anyone for financial assistance, but it started coming in. These donations started coming in. And within a week, though, it basically stopped, maybe 10 days. And so did the communication. It was odd. But beginning on October 7th, I should say October 8th, October 7th was almost this peaceful sense of quietness, not peaceful though, a strange, eerie sense of quietness, even from news media. It was coming, but it was confusing. But come October 8th, it seemed like the streets, and not seen, I think it was a reality, the streets of major cities in the U.S., in Europe, Australia, started giving room for protests and protesters. And from sidewalk to sidewalk, these colorful banners stretched across city streets with slogans in support of Hamas. Most of them said, "From the river to the sea, Palestine must be free." Following, though, right behind them were these crowds of people chanting these words, same words. And these words, oddly, they were professionally printed on massive banners. And within a week or two, these same banners began to emerge on university campuses all over our nation. Not long after that, tents were erected for these college kids to protest. Where'd they come from? You know, these protesters get these beautiful new tents, and they're set up in rows and in areas that were once just hangout areas. And those who stayed in them were at one time, very recently, students, but now they had a mission. If their college supported Israel in any way, it had to immediately stop or they were going to put an end to it. Classroom attendance was secondary to storming the school administration buildings. Fires were made to keep the protesters warm at night and by day to burn Israeli flags. People began supplying the students from all over the cities and bringing them food and water in abundance for their support, as signs of their support. But these students, to their credit, I believe they were mostly ignorant. I don't think they knew really what was going on, but they were chanting as if they did, and they meant it. You could see it in their faces. They were angry, but what they were angry about became very clear. They didn't know what they were talking about. They didn't know the river when they were interviewed, and they didn't know the sea. But that means from east to west, it was entire land of Israel, completely. To free that meant to rid it of Jews. This has been the Palestinians' plan ever since the beginning. It's in their constitution. So how could these students know? How could they know what they were chanting meant? Who's going to tell them? You know, they start chanting in Arabic that Allah is greater, Allahu Akbar. So how could they know unless they took a course in Islam, which I'm sure they will be now, and submitting the world, this is what Islam's plan is, to under its own authority. But they weren't taught this in college. These things are left out, and nor would they, because most of the major universities in America are supported by oil-rich Arab nations, not by Israel. So the question that no one seemed to ask was, who made these banners that magically appeared? And who purchased and widely distributed the hundreds of tents, food, water, first aid kits for the protesters? Who supplied these well-crafted black and white keffiyehs and the colorful Palestinian flags for the thousands of protesters? So my vision of a heavily weighted blanket began to make sense with each passing day a little bit more. You know, what the mainstream media likes to forget, seemingly, is that on October 6th, Israel and Gaza had a peace treaty. And even though it never stopped Hamas from randomly sending rockets into Israel, Israel would basically respond in kind and there was no breakout in battles or war. But on the 7th, Hamas broke the treaty and they began terrorizing Israelis, unarmed civilians in their homes, their farms, concerts, police station, bomb shelters, bus stops. They entered the homes of unarmed civilians, shooting and killing men and children in unmentionable and cruel ways, but not without first raping the women and in front of the eyes of their husbands and sometimes children as well. It's just unspeakable, and it's worse than that. So we know these things. How? Because the militants proudly made videos with their iPhones, their smartphones, and selfies, and calling home and sending these right away, and very proudly parading their bounty. So they took about 250 hostages, which included babies, children, old men and women, Holocaust survivors even. They paraded them through the streets of Gaza. The people would poke at them, pull their hair, and just dance around these pickup trucks as they were laying in the back. And it was their bounty of war. Before they hid them in their dark tunnels from that point on, even till today. So at different times during these last 2 years, most of the hostages were released, but it was in exchange for thousands of Palestinian criminals. Many of them were terrorists, and they were serving multiple life sentences in Israeli prisons. Israeli civilians became currency for Hamas, while their own people became human shields. This was public information, but mostly avoided from public media. Meanwhile, the social media had a field day using the propaganda fed to them from Arab sources, and it was taken as gospel. So Israel was falsely accused, yet widely believed to be a genocidal state, which practiced forced starvation on the Palestinian people. But if that were true, why did the IDF drop tens of thousands of leaflets warning the people to leave their buildings, leave these communities where they're going to bomb in the next coming days? So there's a massive amount of text messages that were sent. I don't know how they do that, but they did. And even phone calls to the leaders and of Hamas military to evacuate and get your people out of certain portions of their cities because they're going to be bombed. They identified the locations where missiles had been fired from Hamas. These coming out of certain buildings. And so they wanted to destroy them, which is the obvious thing to do. So if they were starving them, why would they bother to save their lives before they began to starve them? It makes no sense, but they don't ask the questions. And why did Israel deliver over 1 million metric tons of food and supplies to Gaza if they were out to genocidally remove them? Another question that was not asked is why didn't the UN, along with the nations of the world, protest the abduction of a great percentage of the food before they reached distribution, and then sold it at exorbitant prices to their own citizens? This is what Hamas did throughout these 2 years. The question why is a philosophical one when it comes to good and evil. And I found that after asking God that question so many times in my life, not just in these 2 years, without getting an answer, you know, it no longer upsets me. And this is one of the benefits of these 2 years. It's made me inquire of God in so much deeper ways because I don't want to argue. I just want to learn. So I learned that he just doesn't answer the question why. It's just not in him. He doesn't do it. It's taken me 45 years to realize that. But if that's the case, I have a decision to make. Either I'm going to get mad at God for not answering me, not telling me why. I can threaten to cast my faith to the wind or quit believing. But it's taken me a long time to realize that God is looking for a different response instead of my accusations, instead of asking why, because if any time to ask why, it's been in these 2 years. But the question God is looking for is, what part can I play to bring a solution to this? What can I do to help? Now, I'm not going to tell you what we've come up with, what God has told us right now. But it's something that's remarkable, and I think it's going to be extremely helpful and useful, and it's going to change much of the traumatic condition that many Israelis are in. It's God's vision, and we've been very, very careful to unfold it, unpack it, and it's going to be done in Israel with Israeli believers, both Jewish and Arab, and it's coming soon. And you could play a role in this, so just keep tuning in. So what I know from God is that if I'm going to ask the question, then anything he answers me is going to always be in the realm of bringing benefit to those who suffer in big or small ways. It cannot be about me. The Bible is central theme to the type of help needed, along with common sense, which is no longer common, I'm sure you've noticed. During this war, the partners that we serve in Israel, they become a model to me, and they could be for you. because immediately after the news of the invasion, instead of, you know, crawling in a corner and crying out why, they began collecting food, blankets, bedding, even mattresses for the new recruits who were called up to these bases because they were not prepared for the influx of new soldiers that were coming in, that thousands were called in and called back from the reserves to be fighting again. But our partners, they were setting up tents, and this is not just partners that we support, but believers across Israel. Now, Messianic community is quite small, relatively small to the population, but they were working as if they were, themselves were an army, and they began this incredible collection of goods and supplies and food and clothing, and at the same time, they were making sure their own neighborhoods were secure from further invasion. And so we helped with this process because of your generous support, and they were able to buy these goods and materials, and a lot of them were donated from warehouses all around Israel for the same cause of survival. So it's important to understand, though, that the West Bank, which the world calls the West Bank, it's literally biblically Judea Samaria, it was also part of this jihadist plan to destroy the Jews living there. And there are many Jews there, Israeli Jews living in Judea, Samaria, and along with Muslims living in that same area, but usually not next door neighbors, but sometimes, yes, they do. But you got to understand also that the West Bank is not a straight line. It weaves in and out of Israel proper. So the West Bank could be just right around the corner, stone's throw away from a Jewish house or moshav in Israel. So the security measures had to be totally changed and preparation needed to be made for that, for people's homes and neighborhoods to be safe. So October 7th was the beginning of a widespread war that was fought on seven fronts of Israel. Israel was widely successful, amazingly so, in the military efforts, but they failed in the war of public opinion. And that is where Hamas shined. Israel had no time or resources to convince the world that there was a difference between good and evil, but maybe they assumed that the church could do that part. As a ministry, Comfort My People, we began sending financial assistance, and it was a great boost for their efforts and morale. And when our partners visited the army bases with warm jackets and flashlights and hygiene supplies, they made them know that this is coming from donors, from Christians who love them, who support them, because they want to see them survive and continue their work of spreading the gospel in Israel. So conversations started all over Israel, and I've heard stories from our friends. I've been there. I've been there twice during this war, and I visited the Gaza envelope. I visited where the concert was. I visited Sderot, where the police station was blown up. The bus station was, bus stops were just loaded with dead bodies. I didn't see the bodies. They were gone by the time I got there. But I saw pictures of exact places, and it was horrendous, absolutely horrendous what they did. I had been at a home of one of the moshavs, kibbutzes, that was the home of a woman. Her husband and she and two children lived through it miraculously. Even though there was Hamas militants in their house, they stayed quiet in their bomb shelter for 8 hours. And they, even though they shot into it in case they were in there, that they didn't get hurt. And she told me these stories. It was it was out of a horror story, horror movie. But this is what humanity turned into. And it really, I don't know if you could call them humans. But during this 2-year period, there's been incredible conversations that have taken place all over Israel with unbelievers, even atheists, that were conversations that were in the realm of life and death. It was a realm of what happens after this. Are we ever going to stop fighting wars? Are they ever going to stop hating us? So this led to conversations about, you know, who is God? Does he care? Who is the Messiah? Is Jesus the Messiah, Yeshua? And so many conversations about that, and that individually and collectively as a nation, there's this inquiry going on that never did before. So the opportunity is to share their faith has been just wide open. And at the same time, they're providing these supplies. And in some cases, and one friend who's an Iranian-born believer who moved to Israel just before the war, He was also trained as a cook, and he started, somebody gave him a commercial kitchen to work with, and he had volunteers, and they were making 500 meals a day and delivering them to local army bases each day. And he would tell his testimony as an Iranian-born Muslim about how he loves the Jewish people because Jesus had changed his heart. And they were just amazed. And here he is serving them good hot meals. So there's no question that Israel was unprepared for the assault. And many questions are yet to be answered regarding that. But there's also no question that God performed many miracles to prevent these highly trained and well-equipped terrorists and their nations from causing cataclysmic destruction and death. No one's going to win this war, but the world owes Israel a debt of gratitude for disarming, even if only temporarily, Hezbollah, Syria, Iran, Yemen, Gaza, and the local militant militias within Israel. There is a winner, though, in the Seventh Front, and that is Satan. He has convinced the minds of millions of Westerners to publicly proclaim that the Palestinians, who represent militant terrorists across the globe, are good and Israel is bad. The war's not over, but the effect thus far is very painful to report. But there is some very good news that we have as believers that has yet to be sprung on the nation. So let me just ask you, mention a few things. Maybe it's questions. I think I'll pose it that way. Is the world a better place now after these 2 years? Have we made amends? Have we corrected things? Is Israel in a better place? Is Islam in a better place? Is the church in a better place? Are the Jews in a better place? I'm just going to tell you a few things that go along with that, that I think. You know, recently the UN made a vote and they have 193 member states. Out of that, 142 voted for a two-state solution, and only 10 opposed it. A two-state solution equals genocide. It would wipe Israel out, and there's much conversation to back that up. Gaza, there was a two-state solution in 2005 when Israel, through Ariel Sharon, the prime minister, gave up Gaza, which was the city. They didn't call it a city, but that property had, you know, basically 2-3 million people. By the way, the population of Gaza has increased since the beginning of this war. You know, we talk about genocide. How come population's growing? Doesn't make sense. Another thing. So that aside, Gaza was a Palestinian state in 2005. Before that, there was Jews living there and Arabs in the same land. It's not like they got along great, but they got along. There was businesses there. There was factories there. And they left everything. They had to. It was this land for peace treaty they had. And it forced the Israelis that were living there out. And it was horrible. The idea of how to actually drag their own people out of their homes and take them across the Gaza envelope into Israel. So they left behind industry, especially greenhouse, very high-tech greenhouse, and their homes, their synagogues, and properties. And it wasn't long before the synagogues were burnt down, the businesses were destroyed, even this high-tech, they were growing all kinds of plants and greenhouse and, you know, just industrial stuff, and they destroyed it. So that is kind of clear evidence of what happens with this two-state solution, because in those 20-year period, these tunnels were built, this infrastructure was built, all with one vision, and that was to enter Israel and destroy it. It was not just from the south, where Gaza is, but also from the north, where Hezbollah is, and then, of course, the Houthis would always give them fire protection, firearms, you know, in the air, I should say, protection with their missiles, and Iran was in the nearby to do cleanup work, along with Syria. So all this stuff was to waste because they spent all this time, their whole infrastructure, all the money that was could have been used for so many other things was turned into a military base. Basically, all of Gaza became a military base. So what about in Israel itself? You know, tourism fell apart. They couldn't have tourism, which was their main occupation of most of the country, was somehow involved in tourism. Agriculture, they couldn't control the crops anymore because there was not enough field help. Most of the field help and care, even the good jobs, you know, was done by Palestinians, but no longer. Construction is down. There's no construction going on. All their efforts were going into this war. Tens and tens of thousands of displaced people in Israel from the missiles. Cost of the war has driven prices up and the supply chain down. There's this emotional and mental trauma, which is immeasurable, but they say 80% of the children are noticeably affected by their behavior, that there's things going on that, you know, are just not like they ever were. But as far as Islam goes, did anything good come to them? Well, since 2 years have passed, things have changed. In the mid-20s, let's say mid-2000, maybe 10 through 2020, 60% of young Americans supported Israel. And now 60% of the age group under 30 years old supports Hamas. This is through a few pollings. Now, Hamas has been declared a terrorist organization, but 60% of the population under 30 years old supports Hamas, literally. And since that time, in America, massive mosques have either been built or, you know, finished building, or they're in process of building massive ones in cities, not all over the country, but, I mean, beautiful, very expensive Islamic centers and mosques. But there was the... also were successful, not in killing, but in sending over 26,000 missiles and rockets to drones. Why is that a success? Because every time one goes over, the Jews have to run to a bomb shelter. If they don't have one in their house, they have to go in their apartments, in the stairways, and anywhere where there's some kind of four walls hiding them, protecting them, which is not for everyone. Not everyone makes it. And those are the ones that ended up dying, was the ones that couldn't make it, because they had credible iron domes, etc. So, yeah, it seems like Islam did profit over this time, and their seemingly reputation with the world is better than it ever was, because the vast majority of the nations are in support of Palestinians having their own nation. So that's their reward. They're actually set up for this incredible reward. Congratulations, Hamas. So, how about the church? Well, I don't really know how to answer that, if the church is in a better place or not, because, and I'm going to let you think about it and help me to understand, because I can't understand the quiet. There was so much lack of attention that Israel was feeling. And this is believers in Israel I'm talking about that had a lot of support, and they weren't like asking, you're not sending money anymore. It's like, you're not communicating anymore. And so I can't answer that question. But I do know that there is a call. There is a call for the church to be three things biblically. And the first one is family. And the family of God is made up of Jew and Gentile alike. It's called the Bride of Christ in here in the States, and Bride of Messiah in Israel. But it's made up of Jews and Gentiles. That's the church, according to Ephesians 2 and 3. But what happened to that family relationship? Did it ever really develop fully? Has it developed at all? Or is it very minimized, so much so that it seemed to disappear? But the other thing that church Christians are called to be is watchmen. Notzrim in Hebrew is actually a biblical term, which was translated in modern Hebrew in the 1900s for Christians, the name Christian. And shepherds, the shepherd of Israel was supposed to be shepherds of the people of Israel. So some things are missing, but I want to end with on a high note there, because I think that there's a future hope here. But also in the U.S., the anti-Semitism has just gone off the charts. There's almost 10,000 reported anti-Semitic incidents in 2024 alone. They don't have all the stats for 25. And college students would most likely not be in that number because they didn't report the incidents that took place on the campuses, most of them. And in Europe, the Jews have been personally targeted in the tens of thousands, in addition to violent protests and murders. And over 60,000 Jews have made Aliyah. Aliyah is the return to Israel of Jews, wherever they are. Since October 7th, there's been 60,000 Jews that have left their lands, and some had been living there for centuries, even their families, but they left because they felt unsafe and came to Israel with what they had. But the bottom line is that the church holds the keys to the kingdom, and within that kingdom lies this balanced sense spiritually of Jews and Gentiles walking and working together to bring the gospel into the nations. But it hasn't happened yet. The Middle East peace has never been. We listen to President Trump, he thinks it's remarkable because he thinks it's going to happen. I hate to say this, and this isn't pessimism. It's just not going to happen politically. There's no way it's going to happen. It never has, and it never will, but it can happen, and that's spiritually. I have met enough Arab believers, enough Muslim-born believers from different countries, Muslim countries, who have come to faith in Yeshua, the Jewish Messiah, and the supernatural love for the Jewish people is one of the first noticeable things that takes place. The hatred is gone. Not only gone, but the desire to do things together, to work as brothers and sisters. And you'd see that through our ministry partners. But the church holds the keys to the kingdom because God has unleashed it on the cross. And Ephesians 2 and 3, I highly recommend you read that carefully and repeatedly to understand. I think it's widely missed and not taught as it should be. Because in there is this mystery that at one time was concealed, but in Paul's day, it had now been revealed through the prophets and apostles at that time, that this one new man is the eternal purpose of God because it's the manifold wisdom of God which is unleashed to the forces of darkness in spiritual places. That is the Middle East peace treaty, and it's the peace treaty between men of goodwill everywhere. And this is the good news. If we take hold of that, then I can't say these 2 years and the horrible incidents of people dying needlessly is worth it, their blood. I can never say someone's blood is worth someone else's success. But if this it turns around and the church wakes up to its calling, I think we're going to see some remarkable things happen. But you have to be willing. We all do. We need to learn from each other so we can grow together to be a force that's to be reckoned with, not for us to run from the trouble as it comes. So bless you and keep you, and may we keep this world from the evil that we've experienced so horrifically in these past 2 years. Shalom, shalom.
We bless you for taking the time to consider this message. May it cause you to be fruitful and effective and lead others along the way with confidence and determination. Check out our website at comfortmypeople.com to become better informed and equipped to restore righteousness to the people of Israel, America, and beyond. Please consider sharing this and visit us on social media. Shalom and blessings.